starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me. We have to teach the children about living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in their hands. Watching the crows, they follow our steps. If we do right, I'm sure they'll understand.
Hello, this is Deanna. This is Spingola and Friends. It is Monday, August 18th, 2014. This weekly program is not sponsored by anyone, and therefore, it is for people who can really handle the truth. My website is spingola.com. There you will find information on my books, the Ruling Elite series. The timeline of book 2 and 3, it's a work in progress, is there, which might be of interest to the listeners. I would also love to have you visit the website of a friend and listener who has created and maintains the website spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com. All of the more recent audio files of my programs are at that site, and that includes RBN and the American Free Press. Excuse me. For questions during the program, you may call 646-787-1915. We will be taking questions and comments from the listeners via my email comment@spingola.com or from the chat room spingola.chatango.com. My guest today, and I'm just so excited to have her back, is Dr. Jennifer Daniel. She is the author of Murder by Medicine, Is No Accident the Lethal Dose? Why Your Doctor is Prescribing It. She is also the co-author of Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? Her website is vitalitycapsules.com, and there you will see all of her radio replay files. It's a wonderful site. She's recently redone it. I love the green color. I just love that color. It's so fresh and vibrant. Dr. Daniels, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Okay, you're going to talk to us about something that it's kind of a new topic that will really be of interest to everyone. And it's something that when I first heard the term cord blood, I thought, what is that? Who knew?
Yeah.
The doctors, the pharmaceutical industry, and the American Medical Association, they just have all kinds of nifty little ways of making money.
Making money by recycling your body.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Many people think that recycling means separating the paper from the plastic from the glass.
Yes.
But they don't realize that they are being recycled at every point. You know, when they ask you to sign the donor card and you agree to recycle your body, it's an $11.3 million payday for the industry. And most people don't realize it's that kind of bounty on their head when they enter the hospital. You know, no wonder it's so dangerous. And now we find there's a bounty on our babies.
Yes. If I had it to do over again, I would have had home births. In fact, in my next life, that's what I'm going to do.
I know, it's a bit terrible how we were suckered and we just didn't know, and how we were totally defrauded, and now we've got to talk our daughters into doing the right thing. And of course, they got worse programming than we got, and they're totally brainwashed. It's like, Mom, I don't know. I don't want to have my baby at the hospital. Well, you're just saying that. Well, don't be cheap. My baby's worth every last whatever technology can provide. And, you know, I had a niece who got pregnant with triplets. And I tried to explain to her she needed to eat 24/7, fill herself up, gain weight, get fat quickly. It was an emergency. And she says, well, Aunt Jennifer, my parents have excellent insurance, and so I'm just going to have the best babies that modern healthcare can provide. And I'm telling you, they had her on antibiotics. They put in a pick line to hydrate her, all kinds of stuff, and the babies were all murdered. They all died at 18 weeks. She miscarried. And in retrospect, she realized that she aided and abetted the doctors in murdering her three babies. And, of course, she has not had another pregnancy since, so this has, for her, been a real tragedy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, that's sad. Oh,
it really is. I mean, could you imagine getting triplets without any medical assistance? I mean, that's a huge gift. Most ladies pay $100,000 for that.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Well, I've had a lot of, I've done a lot of family history research, and there were a lot of twins in my family. Mm-hmm. There was, a lot of twins. One family had, I think, three sets of twins, and this was in the 1800s, and no problems. No, some of the stories of my ancestors and the way that they fixed themselves, including having one boy accidentally, when he was working with a cutting wheat, accidentally opened the abdomen of the other one. We just carried him home. His mother used soot ash from the fireplace, a needle, and sewed this kid back up, and he lived to be 75 or something.
Oh, my gosh. Without the $20,000 medical bill,
right,
without the hospital-acquired infection,
amazing.
That is a source of true wealth, by the way. The reason the middle class in the United States is shrinking and becoming poor is they are impoverishing themselves through reliance on what we call modern healthcare industry or the medical industrial complex. If you just take away healthcare bills from healthcare bills and health insurance premium payments from almost any middle class person, that would just skyrocket their standard of living.
Exactly.
And they don't see it, and they lack the courage and the understanding to do that on their own. So that's actually the goal of my program, which is Healing with Dr. Daniels, which is Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
Great. And tomorrow, tell the listeners what you're going to be covering tomorrow.
Tomorrow I'm going to talk about Ebola and other things that go bump in the night.
Good.
And I'm going to trace the scientific comprehension or understanding of infectious disease, methods for detecting infectious disease, up to modern day times. And I'm going to take a look at the Ebola situation using that model and my own practical experience of working with highly contagious patients in what was perceived to be an outbreak situation.
Right. I think it's so wonderful that you have all these radio files, these radio replay files on your website. I listened to one this morning, and all you have to do is go visit vitalitycapsules.com and click on radio replay, and it's an entire list, and it's just wonderful. But I listened to the one on thyroid this morning.
Oh, yes.
And I think that people who have specific issues, and you do cover so many specific issues, that you have to re-listen to certain programs. And I've listened to most of the programs on that list. And I think that you really do need to listen again, because we are also programmed to believe certain things. And it was really funny. One of the callers called in. It was a gentleman, and he said that he was on Synthroid or some medication, and he still wasn't feeling well, and you told him, well, adjust your medication. Cut the capsule in half or cut the tablet in half. And he said something about the doctor yelling at him. And you were so funny. You were so cute, as usual. And you said, well, what's more important, the doctor yelling at you or you're feeling good? And you went on to explain to him that it was his body and that he had the responsibility, more or less, to make these decisions. And it is so true. Absolutely so true.
But we're programmed to abdicate that, to give that over to the doctor. And then because of our schooling, we always want to get the right answer, the right answer, the right answer.
Oh,
and
yes.
So the doctor then is substituted in the place of the teacher that we've been programmed to obey all these years. And you want the right answer. You want an answer the doctor approves of. And you're so distracted by seeking the approval of this total stranger that you forget your real goal was to feel better.
Right.
And it's this distraction that's responsible for most of the murder by medicine.
Exactly. Yes. From listening to your programs, I have literally decided that I will never, never go to a hospital ever again. And as I look back at all the times that I have ever been sick in my life or had anything wrong with me, it is because I did go to the doctor.
Exactly.
And my mother gave me so many antibiotics the doctor. And I had chronic ear infections and just all kinds of, all kinds of problems. And it was chronic. In fact, in the third grade, I missed 3 months of school.
Wow.
I think she enjoyed having me sick. Well, she enjoyed taking care of me. Let's put it that way.
Right. She thought she was, again, doing the right thing, getting the right answer. And why didn't she just solve problems on her own the way her mother or grandmother did? Because she was a product of public schooling.
Exactly.
When I say public, I don't mean whether you paid for it or not. I mean she was schooled outside of the home. I call
exactly.
that public schooling because you're schooled by the public.
Right.
By someone who doesn't care about you.
Yes. Yes. So anyway, I'm just about drug free. Actually, I've been cutting down on my Synthroid. I thought, well, if I cold turkey it, I don't know whether that's going to be a good thing. That's why I re-listened to your program and I thought I could do cold turkey. I've been doing it every other day because I thought, well, if I just and I'm thinking, gosh, I might be hyperthyroid now.
In other words, you might be overdosing yourself with medicine.
Well, I might be. Well, I'm taking every other day I take half as much as I used to take, according to the doctor. And I've been doing this for, probably 3 months. And I do put the iodine solution on my skin, and I also take iodorol. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm probably tomorrow. I think today was the last day that I took just a half of a tablet today, and I think I'm done.
There you go.
There I go. And I'll see how I feel. I'm going to do the neck exercises that you recommended, and I'm just going to listen to my body and see what it tells me.
Absolutely, because the thyroid tests, especially, the doctors really don't know how to interpret them.
Right. And the other thing is... the reason I complained to the doctor to begin with was, fingernails, dry skin, cold extremities. Well, I still had those all the years that I've been taking those. Those symptoms never went away, ever.
There you go.
So I'm thinking, so why have I been taking them all these years if the symptoms that I complained about initially are still there? And I've done all the other things, gotten rid of fluoride in my body. I don't eat bread. I just have changed my diet drastically, completely. I have a shower filter. I have filtered water. I have a filter under my sink that filters the water that we drink. I've done all those things that you recommend, and I feel really pretty good. So,
there you go.
Yeah, yeah. My body says I'm doing good.
Yeah. And your body, what your body says is actually more important and more reliable than any test.
Exactly. And they test because they hope to find something wrong with you that they can give you medication for.
They also test for two other reasons. One is to create a disease. Many of the tests are dangerous.
Uh-huh.
And the third problem is, third issue is to garner your confidence. The test says...
Yes.
It's not me. It's the test.
Right.
The test. And then people, because they've been taking tests since they were 6 years old, are programmed to put their confidence in tests.
Yes.
And the tests are objective. Well, the test was written by somebody outside this room who's all-knowing, all-seeing, all-wise. That person wrote the test.
Yes.
The test.
Oh, my gosh. That is so true. Absolutely. I got a consumer's copy, the physician's desk reference.
Yes.
And I'm not going to buy that other one, and I'm not even sure that I'm able to buy it of the post post-approval book that tells you what happens after.
They stopped publishing it. They stopped publishing it.
Oh.
They said it created too much liability.
Oh.
Yeah. I wanted my update version. I said, I'll pay anything for that book. What, $100, $200, $300? Yeah, I'll get my copy.
Oh, my goodness.
And they said, oh, I'm sorry, doctor. We don't publish that anymore. I said, excuse me? Well, how come? It created too much liability. And then, of course, I didn't get to ask, like, liability for who.
Yes.
And you know all the lawyers were buying that book.
Of course they were.
What this book was. This book had a section in the back. It's only 200 pages, not even 200 pages long, but about that, 200 pages long. And it would list a disease, for example, kidney failure. And it listed all the drugs that cause that condition.
Right.
So then as a lawyer, someone could come to you and say, oh, man, I have this condition, whatever it is, and I think my doctor did it. And the lawyer can open the book, say, what was your condition? Oh, you're blind? Okay, let's call it blindness. And they have drugs that cause blindness. And he looked down all the drugs. Were you on any of these drugs? You were? Okay, we got a case. Let's go.
Holy cow.
It was just, you can't say you didn't know when it's written in a book that the drug causes this ailment. So the only thing is the lawyer going to collect from the doctor's malpractice or from the drug company's liability insurance. But either way, the money's there. He's going to get it.
Right.
And so when they don't publish this book, now the lawyer and the patient have to play duck, duck, goose. They have to read this incredible 7-point type abstruse, difficult-to-understand document called the package insert. And there's a lot of synonyms and technical terms where it may say, ocular malfunction when really we're talking blindness here.
Right.
So you have to, that now the lawyer has got, he can't just open a book. He's got to make a decision. Does he want to haul a doctor in for a couple hundred or a couple thousand dollars to interpret this particular package insert for him? So that book just made it so easy for lawyers, for patients, for anybody who wanted to sort this out. In fact, I started using the book in my medical practice back in the 90s, and somebody would come to me, somebody came to me and says, Dr. Daniels, I'm fat. Well, of course, anybody could see she was fat.
she was taking eight
medicines. I said, well, let me take a look. See if your medicines might be doing this. I looked under obesity, and of her 7 medicines, 6 of them caused obesity. I said, Ms. Jones, your chance of losing weight and taking these medicines, or while you're taking these medicines, is not great. Why don't we switch these out to medicines that don't cause obesity? Now, they're going to cause other things, but they're not going to cause weight gain. So ultimately what happened was she decided she'd been on the medicines for so long, she did not want to change them. And so what I did then was put her on my weight loss program, and she ultimately lost about 40 pounds.
Wow.
From drinking more water and, eating a few more vegetables and taking a walk around. I don't even know if she walked around the block. I think she just walked to the corner and back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Terrific. Well, I think that the PDR is great, and I do have a copy, and I look up stuff for other people who don't want to buy a copy. And I think
Now you can go to Amazon and buy last year's issue for like less than $10.
Wow. Yeah, I just bought the Kindle, the most current Kindle edition, because it makes it really easy to look stuff up. I just love the Kindle version.
Oh, great. See, I have the real hard copy edition. It costs a fortune to ship it down here to Panama. $5 a pound, the thing weighs 10 pounds.
Oh, yeah, it is pretty big. Yeah, but
yeah.
It's...
getting it for free is still not a bargain.
Yeah. Wow. Well... Okay.
Let's take a look at these placentas, huh?
Yes, placenta. We're going to talk about placentas today. Now, that does not sound very interesting, but, oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness.
It gets interesting.
Indeed.
Okay, so in order to let the audience understand what we're talking about, I'm just going to give them a little bit of anatomy background. All right. So in the United States, women have a tough time getting pregnant. But let's say you manage to get pregnant. You're really excited. You want this pregnancy. You've got a baby. The baby has a cord attached to it. That's called the umbilical cord. It's attached to a very rich set of blood vessels called the placenta. And the placenta is attached to the woman at the uterus. And so the woman's blood supply goes to the uterus, goes through its filter called the placenta, and then the nutrition, only the nutrition, and some blood, actually only the nutrition, no blood, but only the nutrition goes through the placenta to the baby. The baby has its own blood. And so you have, if you can imagine, take your fingers and put them together, like alternating one and the other. So these, there are fingers of the mother's blood supply and fingers of the baby's blood supply next to each other. And so this placenta is full of blood, more or less. Half to two-thirds of it is mother's blood, and the other part of the rest is baby's blood. So the baby's blood is circulating to this placenta and back, picking up nutrients and feeding the baby, and takes waste away, and the mother's liver and kidneys and lungs actually act as the baby's liver, kidney, and lung, filtering and processing the blood. Okay. So then the baby's born. So when the baby is born, it comes out, he's still attached to the mother. And what doctors do is they cut that cord. Depending on when they cut that cord, it determines how much blood flows from the placenta, the baby's blood, into the baby prior to or at the time of birth. And what happens is this amount of blood determines quite a few things about the baby up as late as 4 months of life. It determines certain measurable parameters. And so when you cut the cord in terms of the baby's health is not a trivial matter. It does have an impact on the baby's health. Right. Now, I first encountered this when I was in medical school. Medical school, we were taught to immediately cut the cord. You had to cut the cord within 30 seconds. 30
wow.
seconds less. Yes. Cut that cord. And you had to cut the cord as close as possible to the baby's body. Why? Because the teaching hospital sold the umbilical cord to the cosmetics industry. And the longer the cord, the more money the hospital got for the sale of this cord.
Sick. Sick, sick, sick.
Now, that's another piece here is the placenta, which is like it's like a cake. You can think of it as actually probably like an 8 to 12-inch round, one layer, or actually some ladies, it's like a two-layer cake, very thick blood vessels. And so the baby's blood is stuck in that umbilical cord and in the placenta. And so what happens is the cord is clamped, the placenta is removed, it goes into a pan, and the pan is whisked out of the delivery room by some very responsible, careful person. And then we continue, you know, baby care and mother care. Now, the reason we doctors were given for cutting the cord as early as possible was so that the care of the baby could not be delayed and we could administer whatever life-saving therapy the baby needed and we could do a complete evaluation as soon as possible. All right. That's what we doctors were told. And so some wise apple decided they'd do a study. They'd look into this. You know, a lot of things they teach us in medical school, they just kind of make it up. It's like we never looked. We never checked. And so the question in my mind is, which is more important, the blood from the placenta or the intervention or medical care that we doctors pretend to give? And the first place to look is the effect on full-term healthy infants. Now, if you know anything about, if you've had a baby and you go to the doctor and you get well baby visits, what's the doctor looking for? The doctor is looking for anemia, and the doctor keeps checking and checking and checking, taking this baby's precious blood, of course, and creating the anemia he's looking for. We won't even bother with that thing, but he checks the baby for anemia at each well-child visit, and he checks for lead as well. And usually, shocking, he finds anemia and then, of course, gives the baby iron. So let's see if we can't figure out why this poor kid is anemic. And so this is a study done by doctors, and it's published at PubMed.gov, the government site, National Library of Medicine. And what these people did, actually, this was done at a Swedish county hospital. So it wasn't done in the United States, but it's published on the U.S. medical site. And what they did was they investigated the effects of delayed umbilical cord clamping compared with early clamping on the infant iron status at 4 months of age in a European setting. And shock, 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 what they found was that delayed cord clamping compared with early clamping resulted in improved iron status, means kids didn't need supplemental iron, and reduced prevalence of iron deficiency at 4 months of age, and reduced prevalence of neonatal anemia. In other words, clamping the cord early prevents the baby's own blood from flowing into his body and creates anemia at birth.
Creates more patient care, huh?
Correct.
Yes.
You make money selling the umbilical cord, and you make money treating the kid for the condition that you cause. That's right.
And what does it do with the blood that should have gone to the child's brain? Does that create some sort of a deficiency?
That comes next, but it creates a deficiency in preterm infants.
Okay.
In term infants, they haven't documented anything about the brain. In fact, all they looked at was iron. But I think if they look at the brain, they might find something there too. So delayed cord clamping benefits full-term infants, even in regions with a low prevalence of iron deficiency anemia. So the doctors are actually manufacturing anemia, a pretty serious medical condition. And if you're anemic at birth, you're pretty much behind the eight ball because the baby's growing very quickly and he's going to pretty much stay anemic for a while.
Wow. Now, when did they start doing this, immediate clamping?
Well, I entered medicine in 1979.
Okay.
It's been going on for a while now.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, I mean, if you're no kind of doctor, if you can't get that clamp on and clamp it as close to the baby as possible, and they've had disasters where the doctors have cut the cord too short and there's no way to stop the bleeding. And so you have this baby bleeding out, so to speak.
Right.
And just for the audience to get an understanding of this, the umbilical cord itself is a white piece of collagen that has no nerves in it. You clamp an umbilical cord, baby doesn't feel anything.
Mm-hmm.
But you cut the cord too short, and now you've got to get clamps and reach into the baby's belly to clamp off his bleeding cord.
Oh.
That is a hell, yeah. Awa, awa, awa. Then you got to darn it put the poor kid under anesthesia.
Wow.
So this is major, torture.
Yes.
For the unlucky kid.
Wow.
So this is a study they did in pre and full-term infants. Well, so I said to myself, well, if it does that to full-term infants, it can't be any good in preterm infants.
Right.
So in preterm infants, they did a study, early versus delayed umbilical cord clamping in preterm infants. And this was in July of 2004. The other study was done more recently in like 2012. But this is the conquering group, and it doesn't really say where this study was done. Let's see if we can figure out where it was done. Now, we don't seem to have any information on where it was done. Oh, I know. They went through the Cochrane database. They did a retrospective review, which is a retrospective review tend to show less information than ongoing studies. If you have an ongoing study and you see a trend, you can decide, oh, hey, we better measure this too or that too. But if you go back through kind of dead files, it's less informative. So they went back and they found 297 infant charts. And they decided which charts to include and which ones to exclude. And so these are people who were, I won't say biased, but definitely in favor of, the status quo. And what they found was very interesting and actually a little troubling. So what they found was obviously that the amount of anemia was much, much less. So within a 95% confidence interval, they found that the hematocrit at 4 hours was much improved for infants who had later cord clamping. And so fewer infants allocated delayed clamping were transfused for anemia. This is huge because most people don't understand that preterm infants get routine transfusions frequently in the neonatal intensive care unit, and they frequently get diseases from the stuff they get. So this is not trivial.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, this is important. And so these kids are transfused, and they're transfused like 10 cc's of blood. That's 2 teaspoons of blood. But to a preterm infant who weighs a pound or two, 2 teaspoons of blood, you know, goes a long way. And that's blood that was left behind in the umbilical cord and the placenta with this early and close clamping.
And, of course, the procedure would cost more money. If you're going to have a transfusion, well,
oh yeah, you bill for it, absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. Instead of giving the kid his blood right, you know,
not giving
born,
it, letting him have his own
let
blood,
letting him have it, absolutely. Oh gosh. And then they're going to do a procedure and charge him to get his own blood.
No, charge and impoverish his parents. They're
yes,
plunge this kid into poverty.
Oh gosh,
just plunge him into poverty. Why? Because he couldn't wait 3 minutes to let the blood flow into his body.
Sick.
Yeah. And so the relative risk of anemia was more than twice for preterm infants, twice when you clamp the cord early.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, the peak bilirubin was higher, but guess what? The infants didn't die of bilirubin. And This is really just amazing. It makes you stutter. And so then they looked at the cardiovascular effects. So what effect does this have on the heart? So infants who were allocated delayed clamping were less likely to need transfusions for low blood pressure. So they're plunging these kids into shock. So the blood they're depriving this kid of is so important that it actually caused many kids to have low blood pressure for lack of their own blood at birth.
Oh, my heavens.
And so the relative risk, they increased the kids' chances of having low blood pressure by 2.5 times.
Wow.
And they didn't have enough evidence or a big enough size to see if it increased the need for cardiac drugs to get the heart to beat faster. But obviously you can deduce it did. I mean, the treatment for low blood pressure is these cardiac drugs they give to adults. Then you can guess that these kids got more drugging, more heart drugs, which are pretty dangerous. They have a fair amount of complications. And so you can see this leads to a cascade of illnesses and complications in the neonatal intensive care unit that could be prevented by clamping the cord at 3 minutes instead of at 30 seconds or less.
Wow. There's a question, a relevant question here in the chat room. How much time should the cord be left intact for home deliveries?
I would do the same thing, make it 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 minutes is a minimum. I'm not sure beyond 3 minutes. It appears that there is a safety factor naturally built in that if you never cut the umbilical cord, it seals off itself.
Mm-hmm.
And there really is no need to clamp or cut the cord.
Well, our farmer friend, Werner, says that when a calf is born, that he will run his thumb and his forefinger along the cord to make certain that all of the blood goes into the calf before, I guess the cow would bite it off. I don't know how.
No, the calf is a different situation. Okay.
Okay.
The calf is pretty big, and the amount of blood he's pushing into that calf is not substantial.
Okay.
When I say substantial, it's not enough to give the cow a stroke or raises blood pressure or whatever.
Okay.
But you take a human baby, and the volume of the human baby relative to the length of that cord and the blood in the placenta, I would say to anyone delivering their baby at home, simply to, when you deliver the baby, make sure you have, you put the baby at a level slightly lower than the mother's butt. That's before you deliver the placenta. Once you deliver the placenta, keep the placenta at a higher level than the baby. Hand the baby off to mom, let baby latch on, take a few good sucks, because that's going to stop mom's bleeding. That's another thing. So give the baby to mom, let the baby latch on, get a few good sucks. That way you don't have so much blood control. That'll stop mom's bleeding. So while the baby's stopping mom's bleeding, you have another assistant hold the placenta at a level higher than the baby's head, or really the baby's belly, because that's where it's flowing.
Mm-hmm.
And what some people say is they wait until the cord is no longer pulsing. Because
right,
when the cord
okay.
doesn't pulse, that means when the baby's heart beats, that heartbeat is not being transferred up the cord because the cord has already sealed itself off and there's no more blood to go into the baby.
Wow.
So what you do then is you elevate the placenta. When the cord is no longer pulsating, then you clamp and cut.
How natural. This is the way it was supposed to be.
No drama, easy beans.
Oh, gosh.
But it gets worse. So what else happens to these poor kids who are deprived of their own blood? Next is they had intraventricular hemorrhage associated with cord clamping. So what they're saying is the number of vents, though, were too small. So they're saying that if you reduced, so with a reduction in the relative risk of bleeding into the brain, when you delayed cord clamping. So these babies, because their cords are being clamped early, are literally 2.5 times more likely to bleed into their brain and have a hemorrhage, like a stroke. It's a stroke at birth.
Oh, my gosh.
So now you've got a retard. Or if you don't have a retard, at least you got a kid with a lower IQ than what it would have been if he hadn't bled into his brain.
Oh, my gosh. And then you have a patient for life.
Exactly. There you go. Patient for life. Then you can have walks and you can have fundraisers to do more research, to research neuroreceptors and catecholamines and all kinds of other nonsense, totally unrelated to the cause, which is that you clamp the cord early.
Right. Yeah. Oh, this is evil. This is just downright evil.
I mean, you could say that. You can decry it. But I would say to any woman who hasn't got the ball or the gonads to stay at home and take her chances, you know, what do you expect?
Yeah.
What do you expect? I mean, for me, I was ignorant like everyone else was. I went to the hospital for my first kid. I managed to get away with my life. That was good. Second kid nearly killed me, and, you know, I guess the kid survived okay. And so the third time I said, you know what, I'm staying home. And if God wants to kill me, he's going to do it himself and not use the doctor as a tool.
Right.
So let God come down, strike me with lightning, snatch this baby from my womb and murder it and murder me too. If that's what God wants, I'm here, I'm ready. And it was just a smooth 2.5 hour uneventful birth.
The other thing too is that you weren't getting shots to... to slow it down or speed it up or whatever they do. You weren't exposed to germs.
Right.
One of my ancestors was actually, she was home by herself, and they lived on a ranch, and she actually delivered her baby herself without any help.
Right, exactly. It's a do-it-yourself thing, pretty much. It can be. I mean, we like to make a ceremony out of it and have, and that's really all it is. And that's one thing I noticed in medical school is that this whole thing, the doctor with the mask and the gown, the nurse and the this and the baby train, it was all a bunch of theater.
Right.
And one time, this lady had twins. She was pregnant with twins. Oh, my God. Two pediatricians, one for each baby. Two nurses, one for each baby. One other nurse, a third nurse for the mother. A doctor delivering the baby. A surgical backup team. So they delivered one baby vaginally, and the other baby they delivered by C-section.
Oh, my heavens.
Yes, the poor lady was totally filleted open. And at the end of the whole thing, I said to the senior doctor, well, how exactly did we help this lady? How did we benefit her?
Exactly.
He looked at me. He said, well, birth is a very important event. Don't you think you want to have as many people on hand as possible to help out?
Not really.
And I'm like, well, but what did we do? How did we improve the life of this mother? We got her bleeding from the bottom, and we got her tending another sore on her abdomen, and she's got two kids she can't even hold. What was the benefit here? I just want to know. I know there's a benefit. I was a naive medical student. I know there was a benefit. I just want to know what it is. That's all.
No, you were a troublemaker, but they saw you
they
as a troublemaker.
They thought that, but I was ready. I knew what they were doing was the right thing because, of course, it had to be. It was here in medical school, right? But it was absolutely atrocious.
But your common sense, you probably were the only person that asked, well, how is it helping this mother? Right?
Right, because I didn't have any educational loans. I had no pressure. Also, I planned to go back and practice medicine in the ghetto. I didn't need these guys' permission to do that.
Sure.
You know, I didn't need, I mean, I had the Ivy League credential, but I didn't even need that. So I had no need of their approval. I was just trying to get to the bottom of this so I could
figure
do
it
as
out.
Good a
yeah.
job as possible. Right, yeah, I was trying to sort this out. Like, you know, I know there's a good reason. I'm just looking for it.
Wow. Now, you mentioned cesarean birth.
Mm-hmm.
Is the cord clamping even quicker under those circumstances?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because the baby's never really born, first of all.
Right. I have a theory about that.
Yeah, you in the medical profession, too. Lots of papers have been written that passing through the birth canal is actually a beneficial thing for the baby.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so it's common to have something called TTN, transient tachypnea of the newborn, which is a respiratory condition totally caused by cesarean birth. But it generates at least 1 to 3 days of revenue in the neonatal intensive care unit.
Oh,
goodness. Yeah, very important. Very important.
Yeah.
So doctors know, and it's a well-documented fact, that passing through the birth canal, first of all, it squeezes the baby's lungs and squeezes all the liquid out of their lungs.
Yes.
And so they're ready, they take that first breath and they actually get air. But if you don't put them through the birth canal, the liquid never leaves their lungs, and you have transient, for a brief period of time, the baby's got to breathe really, really fast to work through that mucus in order to get enough oxygen to breathe.
Wow. Well, the only thing that cesarean section does is that it allows the doctor to hurry and get the baby born so he can get on to his next patient instead of waiting around for 9 or 10 hours for this woman who's in labor to deliver.
You say that, but the real deal is this. You get the lady in there, you give her drugs to reduce labor or speed it up, whatever it is. Make
uh-huh.
money on that. You do that for a couple of days, and then you do the C-section. I mean, it's a whole standard of care protocol. The doctor can't just whisk her in there and do a C-section. No. He has to document this. He has to document that.
Okay.
He has to give this drug. He has to give that drug. And that way, everyone gets paid. The hospital gets paid. The drug companies get paid because you administer all these drugs. And, of course, the kid gets autistic. They've linked autism to these drugs, by the way, drugs to delay and speed up labor.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And is autism ever associated in any way with cesarean section?
They haven't really associated with that. They have associated with the drugs, the tocolytics to delay labor, and with the drugs to speed up labor.
Uh-huh.
They've also related to the mother's financial situation. The more money, the higher the family income of the mother, the more likely the baby is to be autistic.
Really?
Really.
Because
it's so striking that for every $1,000 increase in income, there's an increased risk of autism.
That is because they get all the vaccines and they get them at the right time.
It goes a little deeper than that, a little deeper than that. These women, of course, have excellent insurance. They show up for their visits, and they tend to say yes to what the doctor recommends.
Uh-huh.
So that's bad news right there.
Sure.
But being wealthy, I mean, $1,000, what can $1,000 buy that's going to make your kid autistic? Well, it can buy skincare products. It can buy perfume. It can buy dry, clean clothes. It can buy all kinds of baby stuff that has outgassing stuff on it. You know, you can buy an extra baby carrier with extra polyurethane foam that can poison your baby. It can buy, you know, an extra baby mattress, again, outgassing more stuff for the poor kid. It can buy the deluxe car seat with more outgassing, or even better yet, nice new car smell. I know when I had my second or third kid, I had to buy a new car because I was outgrowing my, you know, first car.
Sure.
So all these things that $1,000 can buy, and now I say to any woman, look at your life, the things you buy that cost $1,000 or less, and get rid of them. Don't buy them. Get rid of them. Oh, maternity clothes. Oh, yeah. $1,000 will buy you a whole new maternity outfit. Well, at least a few outfits. And for my, when I was pregnant, I was just overwhelmed. I was working. I was, you know, trying to switch jobs and do all kinds of things. So I just didn't have time. So I bought maybe two outfits, and then I just had to call my sister-in-law who had several children and said, can you just send me your old clothes that you're not wearing?
Mm-hmm.
And so I got clothes that had been washed at least 20 times. And so that's what I did for all three pregnancies, is I wore used maternity clothing that had been pre-washed. I wasn't subjected to chemicals. But you take a lady, you take two women and give one, say, $2,000, $3,000, or $4,000 more income or resources, let's say, during her pregnancy, she's going to buy some more brand new maternity clothes and expose her baby to those toxins and chemicals. And maybe she's going to go to the beauty spa and get some nice stuff on her skin to make herself feel, you know, nice and pampered. And so the all these things, the whole lifestyle that successful, say financially successful people have adopted is what contributes to autism. And this kid is literally smothered with chemicals from conception.
Right.
Of course, the doctors don't help. And the vaccines don't help. But what really opened my eyes was I had a kid in my practice whose mother was a health nut, whose mother had her baby in the hospital naturally and did not vaccinate, and that kid still had Asperger's. I said, wait a minute, back up, time out, something else happened.
Mm-hmm.
And she ate every processed health food you could think of. She had soy burgers, soy milk, soy ice cream, soy noodles, tofu. That was her whole diet. And what brought things to light was she brought the baby in when he was 3 months old, and he had this is a white kid, he had this tannish, crusty skin all over his body like a lizard.
Yikes.
Yeah. And she said, you got to help me take care of this. I did that. I said, fine. I said, you know what? I'm just going to tell you straight up. You're eating something that's causing this, and you're eating a lot of it. That's all I can tell you. So take a look at your diet. See what you're eating a lot of. And if you stop eating that thing, whatever it is, this rash will clear up. And she stopped all of her soy, and boom, his skin cleared up.
Wow. So she was breastfeeding.
Yeah, she was breastfeeding. And she went on, and the kid went on to develop Asperger's, and that became apparent when he was two-ish.
Uh-huh.
And he was not vaccinated.
Wow.
And so this whole autism debate needs to be, I think, widened or made a little bit more broad.
Uh-huh.
And these ladies need to really understand what's going on with their children.
Sure.
Another lady, I know her nanny. And so she's a very successful computer geek, makes boatloads of money. And she and my friend, who's a grown woman in her 50s, her kids are grown, maybe she's 60-something, but she's a nanny to these three children. And so here I am thinking, oh, she has three children, and two of them are damaged. The two are damaged must be twins. And so I asked the lady the other day, because I made all these assumptions in my mind,
mm-hmm.
and I even assumed that the damaged kids were, she had them first because she was ignorant and didn't know maybe how to eat or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and that the normal kid was the younger kid. Not so. The first kid, totally normal. Normal physically, mentally, everything, normal. Second kid is damaged, mentally retarded. Third kid, half the brain missing.
Oh, gosh.
Right. So this lady is doing what? She's working in front of a computer, right? Electromagnetic impulses. And she's probably got several screens up. She's probably got super wide bandwidth, like really strong, electromagnetic frequencies. They say nothing of all the processed food they can afford, all the wonderful clothes with all the wonderful chemicals in them. Maybe they even have air fresheners in every room. I mean, you can imagine, use your own imagination.
Sure.
What do people with money spend it on? I have no idea. So this is clearly what caused the retardation in the second one and half a brain in the third. And probably when she had the first, she wasn't doing that well financially.
Right.
Right. But
all those toys,
yeah, you can't tell people this. Well, I say you can't, but no one's telling them this. And the industry or commerce would gladly let vaccines take the rap. If you can narrow these ladies' focus on vaccines only and not look at their personal care products and not look at their processed food choices and not look at the chemicals in their home and not look at prenatal care itself, that's a major victory.
Sure.
These ladies will never figure it out, and autism is going to keep spiraling out of control. I'm not saying vaccines have nothing to do with it. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, I understand.
But I am saying the problem cannot be solved by refusing vaccines alone.
Right.
Because I thought that it was that simple. But when I saw this damaged kid and a woman who did not use vaccines and was a total adherent to shopping only at the health food store,
Yeah, there had to be some other factor.
Right.
Sure. Huh. But most states mandate vaccines. So she was conscious?
Well, she's in New York State. I was a doctor, and so I ran interference.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So I would document the well baby visits and and vaccinate next visit, vaccinate next visit, vaccinate next visit,
Okay. Okay.
Which is why I'm not there anymore, right?
Why you're in Panama?
Well, there are many paths to paradise, right?
Yes. Wow.
So still haven't finished this cord thing.
Yeah. So what did they do with all that blood and where? What?
The
product?
Blood and the cord and the placenta.
Yeah. Let's. They do with all that.
Breakthrough. September 13th, 2012, scientists develop a skin renewal cream with umbilical cord serum. Yay!
Oh, gosh.
And this is not news. They've been using umbilical cord stuff, like I said, at least back to, as far as I know, late 70s. And these creams sell for a very pretty penny. And we've only got 8 minutes, so I don't want to go into all the detail. But suffice it to say...
this is a two-hour program, so...
Well, let me read you the gory details.
Yeah, let's...
Now, this is written by Madison Avenue, whatever, so let's see what they say. Now, remember, we've taken this kid, right, we've given him a hemorrhage, we've made him anemic, and we've collapsed his circulation so he has low blood pressure. You with me?
Yeah.
Okay. Only to extract this umbilical cord and placenta. And this says, scientists at Global Cosmetic Company... Novo Solutions have developed a line of anti-aging skincare products that features a formulation comprised of purified human umbilical cord serum, an ingredient they say is an industry first in the fight against aging skin. Sounds good already.
Yeah.
If only you knew what's happening to your grandkids, right?
Right.
So a company spokesperson, the patient pending Novo Serum, they're going to patent it. What does that mean? It means they've taken whatever from the cord and artificially adulterated it. Is a cell-free, non-stem cell complex derived from purified human umbilical cord serum that triggers fibroblasts to increase collagen production to stop, slows down, and reverses skin damage in 30 days. Yum, yum, yum. The complex features 12 antioxidants four neuropeptides, 6 collagen and matrix stimulants, 8 anti-inflammatory agents, and 24 moisturizers and emollients that repair and restore age, lost cellular mechanics, to restore natural collagen and enhance the skin matrix. Imagine what that little baby could have done with all those things.
Yes, indeed.
Tried and tested. Manufactured by a U.S. cryobanking facility. That means they freeze the stuff to keep it fresh. The umbilical cord serum is said to be comprised of human growth factors, 350 molecules, proteins, cell signalers, nutrients, peptides, and vitamins. Can you imagine this kid without all of his cell signalers? Jesus Christ. Oh, well. So the Food and Drug Administration is further said to have processed the serum to remove cellular material to retain the peptides and nutrients before the product was feasible to go to market globally. So they removed the nutrients, and they don't tell you, but parasites too, because sometimes there's transmission of different parasites.
Sure.
Trials carried out by Nova Solutions are said to have reported results of 94% of people experiencing more youthful-looking skin, 79% found a decrease in under-the-eye puffiness, while 73% saw a decrease in wrinkles and fine lines. So that means like 27% didn't see a whole lot, right?
Right.
Okay.
And it's probably horribly expensive.
We got the price. We're coming up with the price. We got the price. I got the price list. But let's get through this. So a recent report carried out by Mintel found the Western markets, United States, Britain, and France, account for the most anti-aging skincare product launches between 2009 and 2011 in comparison to Japan and China. In light of this, cosmetic companies have been going above and beyond to come up with unique ingredients to complete the vast segment. So they're preying upon the grandkids to create a serum to smear on the faces of the grandmothers. I think most grandmothers would gladly accept a few more wrinkles.
Absolutely.
Yes.
A
study that found an extract of the common yarrow plant in the northern hemisphere to increase epidermal thickness and improve appearance of wrinkles and pores. So to make this more palatable, they're throwing in a bunch of herbs as well.
Sure.
And so here we are, new launch. And this is a Novo Serum, the breakthrough, natural collagen. And they're going to put stevia extract in it, black walnut extract, gotu-kola extract, medlar tree extract, and algae extract. How can you resist this? And, of course, placental extract, placental.
Now, does it actually say that on the label? Does it actually denote?
This is a new skincare line from human umbilical cord.
So it actually says that.
It's a breakthrough. Novo Solutions skincare line. Rating is 4 stars out of 5. You're going to murder my grandkids. At least I want it to be a 5-star product. Oh, well. And so, seemingly torn out of the pages of science fiction novel, a newly launched skincare line's ingredients from an unexpected source will either make you curious or make you cringe. The source, human umbilical cord fluid from newborn babies. And this is key, newborn babies. This is not coming from aborted babies. Most babies are aborted somewhere around 10 weeks, and the placenta is just not developed, and either is the umbilical cord. So you can't get any substantial amount from that. But the placenta and the umbilical cord of a newborn baby, that's substantial. You know, you can see it, you can cut it, you can process it. It's a fair amount of matter. The placenta usually weighs 2 to 3 pounds, and the umbilical cord is anywhere from 1 to 3 feet, depending on just the baby. It varies.
Good heavens.
And they go and address your concerns. Very well-written sales letter. Now, before you go running to the hills yelling, Frankenstein, you need to know this serum contains no cells or genetic materials.
Oh, wow.
They processed it. Dr. Mark blah, 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 global emergency medicine expert, and one of the founders of this line, says the product line and Novo Serum is completely safe. Of course he says that. The umbilical cord serum is processed and supplied exclusively by a top FDA-certified cryobank in the United States, and it's FDA-checked for any infectious diseases.
Oh, well, that makes it okay then.
That's
what they
said. Good to know. Good to
trust
know.
The FDA.
Nothing here talks about the welfare of the babies who gave up these umbilical cords and placentas unknowingly. Yeah. And so they talk about this. You might be reluctant to put genetic material on yourself, but there's no genetic material or cells in it. And Novo Serum has been clinically proven to promote increased production of collagen and stimulate cells to increase collagen production. And I remember back in the day, Lancome came out with a cream that had placenta in it. Now, Novo with umbilical cord, well, I had to try it. And there's only one word that comes to mind, luxuriant. This is good. All the products in the line contain Novo Serum, a proprietary cell-free complex derived from human umbilical cord serum. They say this formula delivers a facial muscle relaxation effect and increases collagen and hyaluronic acid levels that directly enhance skin structural integrity, radiance, and ability to restore and maintain moisture levels, producing a radiant glow. Okay.
Wow. Wow.
The cleanser feels, they go over the cleanser, feels the cleanser feels like a luxurious serum and glides on. It contains milk lipids, which nourish and moisturize the skin. Okay, so we got the milk from the pregnant cow. We got the umbilical cord from the human. The Cell Active Face Serum feels heavenly and is supercharged to regenerative cells, reduce deep wrinkles and fine lines, and increase skin tightness. I just want to take a face bath in it.
Gosh,
and then they cover the ingredients that I just mentioned. I mean, is this objective reporting or what?
The serum was my fave
of this line, but the Advanced Eye Serum was a close second. When it comes to eye serums, I don't discriminate. I use it everywhere, just not under the eye, so I ran out quickly. Moisturizer is thicker than the serum, still silky, a little fluffy at the same time. I do wish, however, that the SPF was higher than 15. They have a sunscreen on it.
Oh, right, yeah.
After using this line for a week, I noticed my skin was way more hydrated. When's the last time you woke up in the morning and felt your forehead and said, ooh, silky? Okay. So let's talk exfoliator, very gentle and non-abrasive with natural wax, pearls, and cleansers to lift away debris. Now, the chemicals they use to make this stuff pearl up is pretty dangerous stuff, too. To lift away debris, not strong enough to remove blackheads, as those babies still were there after treatment. It also has botanical alpha hydroxy acid complex to help shed dead skin cells and jojoba pearls to increase moisture. And brilliant exfoliant, gotta love it. You know, just great. Let's get to the price here. You get an absolute face cleanser for $30, brilliant face exfoliant for $60, Cell Active Face Serum for $170, Advanced Eye Serum $120, Moisturizing Renewal Cream $70, and Moisturizing Renewal Cream with SPF for $75. Add it up, and it comes to $525, and how long does it last? I like this line a lot. I tried this line until I ran out. So everything lasted me about 60 days. So $525 divided that by 2, more or less, $562.50.
$260.
Right. So this is not cheap.
Especially for the baby.
Yeah. And no thought or regard whatever to what had to happen to get this here. And I will tell you, when I was in medical school, even way back when, if you cut the umbilical cord and left the baby too much of the umbilical cord, you were reprimanded. What? You cut that cord too short. Don't you know we need a longer cord? The longer the cord, more money we get for it. You know, this is very important for the industry, blah, 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 blah. What can I say? I was there in medical school. It happened. I don't know if I cut the cord too long or if I was there watching while someone else cut the cord. You know, I think I cut the cord too long. And so I was roundly criticized. And that this stuff is for the cosmetics industry. It's very important. Now, Matt, I mentioned a cheaper solution, of course, is Rice Bran. It's $5 a month.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You can read all about that in my book, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? You can get that at my site, vitalitycapsules.com. But everything they're saying here that this stuff does is done with Rice Bran, with castor oil, with applying vitamin C to the skin, all these things increase the collagen, make the skin smoother, exfoliate. And unlike this stuff, it does not remove blackheads. You use the exfoliating rice bran, people have reported that their blackheads have been removed, and they do go away.
Right.
And they don't need to go to the esthetician to get blackheads removed anymore. So this is less effective than natural stuff.
And you said in your book, which I also have your other book, your first mm-hmm. book, you should never, ever put anything on your face that you wouldn't be willing to eat.
That's true, absolutely.
Yeah.
If you're not willing to eat the remains of fetuses, basically what we're talking about here, then I guess this is not the...
not the solution.
Not the product for you.
Right.
But you can see this marketing is really shocking. And if all you see is this marketing and you don't see the other side of it, which is these babies languishing in neonatal intensive care units, getting transfusions, and mothers taking their babies to well child visits and wondering, why is my baby anemic, and being given prescriptions for iron drops to give the baby, the iron drops give the baby colic, and the baby gets colic, and she brings it back to the doctor for the colic, and it's just a big cycle. when you don't see that part, then you just read this and like, oh, I don't know. Well, I'm not squeamish. I'm not stupid. I'll give it a try.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think that most of medicine is about marketing. They sell us on all kinds of things. Since 1997, with the ability to have advertising direct to consumer, it's all about marketing. And really, a lot of it is prophylactic. Here, take this so that you won't get that.
As if you were ever going to get that.
Exactly.
And as if getting that, whatever it is harmful.
Right, like chicken pox.
Well, it's like kids, you know, oh, you got cooties, I want to get cooties. And so we've taken the cooties game to a higher level.
Right.
And added higher stakes and higher price and higher harm and penalty. And, of course, the cooties are in the medication, not the disease.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sick. And the blood, the blood that they don't use to transfuse the baby, I would imagine that they sell that also.
Well, that has stem cells in it.
Okay.
Yeah, that has the stem cells in it. And so what's in the blood is you have the white cells and you have the red cells, and the white cells are where you can potentially get the stem cells.
Right.
Yeah.
And then if you happen to be a boy baby, you might also suffer before you leave the hospital the cruelty of being circumcised.
Yeah, I think that's just awful. I think that ranks right up there with animal cruelty, and hopefully mothers will. And there's some mothers in this. Well, you don't want your kid to be the only one standing out at the in the boys' locker room and getting teased. You know, you just can't fall prey to that kind of outrageous reasoning. Or you don't want him to get problems when he gets diabetic and as he gets older. Excuse me, he doesn't have to get diabetes?
Right. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I think we may have a caller who's been, let me just check and see if this is just somebody listening by phone or whether they have a question. 817, do you have a question, 817? Are you just listening by phone? Okay, must be listening just by phone.
Okay. Yeah, so I think what we need to look at as human beings is the total implications. Like we look at where our food comes from and was it raised by people who are being enslaved and mistreated? Is it being raised by people who don't have toilet facilities and, you know, pee on the plants, so to speak, because that's the only bathroom they have is right there in the field. You know, we should similarly look at all of our products. You know, where do they come from? What's really in them? And is this really the way we want to live our lives? Is this the impact we want to have on the lives of others? You know, anyone using an anti-aging cream is going to be, well, over 50.
Sure.
And they're probably going to have a grandchild. And they probably noticed that maybe the grandkid has colic, and it's from the iron drops the doctor has prescribed. And maybe the iron drops are from the cord being clamped too early, and
right.
That's why the kid is anemic. And then, you know, this is what had to happen for you to get this piece of cream here.
Right. Well, I know that that most people don't know any of this. Most mothers-to-be expect that they're going to go through whatever their doctor tells them to do. In fact, I have one friend that says, I wouldn't feel like I was a good mother unless I got my
Absolutely.
Children all of their flu shots.
That's right. And that is the indoctrination that kills the kids. It's unfortunate that people feel it's more important to be a good mother. I mean, when I got pregnant, I decided I just couldn't be a good mother. I just could not fulfill that role because I
was goodness for your children.
No, I didn't. Wasn't that knowledgeable, but I just could not logistically do it. There's no way my kid was making well child visits. I was just too busy, and I did well child visits, so I know that there's nothing good that happens at a well child visit. Nothing.
Right.
The doctor has nothing to offer. All I can do is vaccinate the kid, make him cry, and make him sick, and make him hate his mother for bringing him. The doctor can do that. The doctor can, recommend iron drops for the kid to give him colic. They can recommend a formula to help the kid get malnourished. You know, there's nothing good that can happen at a well child visit.
No, not at all. In fact, I came across a book. It's called How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Doctor.
Absolutely, good title.
It is amazing. And now this book was written in 1985. But it's talking about the Cancer Society. No longer recommends routine annual pap smears.
Right.
And also, they in 1985, they were not recommending a yearly mammogram.
But women were getting them, and doctors were recommending them. It was a standard of care, even though these societies did not. And people don't understand this. Something can be determined by research to be useless. It can be determined by research to even be damaging, like the annual mammogram.
Mm-hmm.
But doctors continue to do it. Why? Because it's the standard of care, and if they don't do it, they don't get paid, they lose their hospital privileges, and a lot of other very bad things happen to them.
Right.
And so the fact that something is known does not give the doctor the freedom to implement it. And so the only protection for you as a patient is your refusal.
Right. And he also says that a pediatrician's bread and butter is the vaccines. That that when you take your baby into the pediatrician,
yeah,
and they go through all of the rigmarole of measuring the baby's length and weighing the baby, he said that that's just all kind of to make you feel like you're getting something when you go to the doctor, when in fact the growth chart that they use is from the insurance companies, and
right,
anybody could get a growth chart on their own, but they just mothers feel like they're getting their money's worth if they
want the doctor to declare their child healthy. The same way you go to school for them to declare you intelligent.
Right. Right.
I'm like, no, I got my own opinion.
Right.
I think I'm pretty bright, so that's the end of it. Or I think I'm pretty stupid, that's the end of it. I got my own opinion about it. You know, whatever it is.
Exactly.
You don't need a third party to certify you as stupid or smart, you know.
Exactly. And he said that breastfeeding is on the rise, a boon to both mothers and babies, despite the continuing failure of many obstetricians and pediatricians to encourage it with vigor. So even back then.
Well, I was told in medical school that breast milk was dangerous and breastfeeding in public was punishable by, you know, by law, fines or whatever, and indecent. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm not even getting involved in that. No breastfeeding for me. And so my kids were not breastfed. I really regret that. But, you know, the indoctrination doctors got was just really awful.
Sure.
And they had to indoctrinate us to believing this nonsense so that we, of course, convincingly indoctrinate our patients.
Right. And it's so amazing when you look at breastfeeding and saying, well, it's indecent in public. And then when you look at the modern clothing that even young girls wear, I mean, now that's immodest. And yet, and people don't just when they're breastfeeding, most people are very modest. They, you know, they drape something over the front of the, you know, over, they cover the baby and everything. And yet we have all kinds of people running around showing whatever they have, and nobody says a thing.
Right, right. Because people showing whatever they have with these skimpy clothes, these are designer clothes. They cost a lot of money. They're feeding some industry somewhere.
Sure.
And when you breastfeed, you're not feeding any industry. So
you're just feeding your kid.
Yeah, just feeding your kid.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. And he also recommends home births, which was kind of interesting back in 85.
Oh, yeah.
And he also said that if your child doesn't feel sick, look sick, or act sick, he probably isn't sick. So give Mother Nature ample time to take care of whatever it is, because usually it isn't anything major. And
yes, for a kid it isn't, especially if you're breastfeeding and you're healthy, then that your kid's pretty much going to be healthy.
Right. And there's such a tendency to run your child to the doctor if he's got the sniffles, when in fact he'll probably feel better in the morning.
Not only that, the medicine that the doctor gives for the sniffles is actually damaging me. I mean, there are actually kids that get strokes and problems from the simple cough medicine. And there's a controversy in pediatric circles about whether to take it off the market or not. It does a tremendous amount of harm.
Wow. And the overuse of antibiotics, it seems that every time I know...
No, it's not overuse. It's not overuse.
It's use?
Correct that. It's the use of antibiotics.
Okay. Okay.
Not any antibiotic use is...
overuse.
Yes. It's the use of antibiotics. And I think this is how the healthcare field skates around it. It's the overuse.
Okay.
And so then when the doctor prescribes antibiotics, oh, my antibiotic prescription is okay. Yours is overuse. And so there's never a case. I'll put you this way. I practiced medicine for 10 years, and I cannot tell you of one case, not one case, where an infection was improved by an antibiotic.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you're going to be proud of me because about a year ago, I store things. You know, if you don't finish something, you put it in the medicine cabinet. I went through my medicine cabinet, went through my bathroom. I threw out all of the prescriptions that I had. I even threw out the Tylenol. I don't take anything. If my head hurts, I drink more water.
There you go.
I have been through your books. And I pretty much do what the recommendation because but I did and I told a friend. She says, "Well, what if you get sick? What if you get a headache? What if you?" And I said, "Well, this is what I do," and explain. Well, what has made me more sick than anything else has been the use of antibiotics when I was a kid, and I had. Ear infections, chronic ear infections. It was always antibiotics, and and I grew allergic to penicillin, and I'm allergic to sulfur, and I think that your body is trying to tell you something, but these
right.
things are very dangerous.
Well, the drug companies are very upfront and open about it. They are called antibiotics or anti-life pills, and to take an anti-life pill and expect to live better just is beyond my understanding. So they are named anti-life pill. There is full disclosure there.
Right. And all of these children, these little
yeah,
kids with
yeah.
ear infections, they
yeah.
go to their doctor, or the mother takes them to the doctor.
They don't have a choice.
That's
if your kid's in daycare and he gets a cold or an ear infection, they say, take him to the doctor. And you can't bring him back until he's on antibiotics.
Oh.
And so these women get trapped in this cycle. And they don't realize that that paycheck is not worth their kid getting stupid over.
Right.
You know, that paycheck is just not worth having a kid that's damaged for life. And those antibiotics, you know, they cause childhood leukemia. They cause a lot of very troubling, damaging things.
Oh, indeed. I mean, I have a friend whose grandchild got brain cancer at 5.
Yeah.
Who ever heard of a kid getting cancer 50 years ago? Kids didn't get cancer. I mean, they just...
No, in fact, when I was a kid, which was 57 years ago, it was stupid to even buy health insurance for your kids because kids never got sick.
Right. People, and they didn't take their kids to the doctor unless they had some sort of an accident. They just didn't take their kids to the doctor. But
yeah.
you mentioned before about insurance. And after World War II, a lot of the corporations offered insurance as a benefit, a non-taxable benefit that would kind of add to the person's, you know, without adding more salary, it would add benefits. And people thought, oh, this is good. And it was just for catastrophic events. Whoever dreamed that insurance would grow to the point that they would pay for well baby visits or all these other things? Whoever knew that?
Well, you know, it's a trend. You know, once you have that dependency, it's easy to kind of extrapolate it. I just want to say for listeners that what happened was businesses wanted to give employees a raise get them to either work harder, longer, or stay with the company. But there was a wage freeze in effect at the level of the federal government. It prohibited businesses from giving raises to people. And so as a way around it, the unions and the businesses decided, okay, we're going to add this benefit called health care. And what they found was workers over time valued the health care benefit even more than the wages, and it serves as a way to bind a person to a job that they might otherwise quit.
Wow.
And this is so absurd, and it really has reached, I think, a peak intensity in the past 10 to 15 years, where we see people actually seeking out employment in order to get health benefits, even with jobs that they hate or can't stand. We find people working at jobs that pay very little just because it has health benefits. And then, of course, let them try and use those health benefits. I mean, as a doctor, I can tell you I had many people in my practice who were poor who took very low-paying jobs just so they could get health benefits, only to find the health benefit didn't pay for this, didn't pay for that, and it was just a total farce. But they were then chained to a job they hated. And they even talk about quitting. The spouse would say, oh, we're going to lose our health benefits. And people now use health benefits to make a lot of decisions.
Right.
When to retire, where to work, how long to work, who to marry. This is, and it's amazing, especially when you think that, first of all, the health benefits do not prevent financial ruin from health bills. It's very, it's only 11% effective, which is not very effective. Then you consider that the care you're getting is damaging as opposed to helpful. So once you take a look at that, you say, wait a minute.
Right.
Why am I marrying this person I barely know to get something that's not going to help me financially or even health-wise? It makes no sense.
Right. And the typical thing that people always say is, yes, but what if something happens? What if I get some major disease? And that
I would tell them the more major your disease, the more reason you have to stay away from the doctors, because whatever the doctor does is going to destabilize you. It's not going to stabilize you. You know, I write these comic strips, right?
Yes, I love your comic strips.
Let's see if I can remember this one correctly. You have two guys who are talking to each other. The doctor and a patient. So the doctor says, well, your condition is pretty serious. We need to try this drug. Either it's going to cure you or it's going to kill you. And the patient says, wait a minute, doctor. If this drug is that dangerous, how could it possibly be any help to me?
Right.
And so that's really the case. And so if you have a drug that's going to make a healthy person sick, how can it make a sick person any healthier than he already is?
Right. And you've mentioned, too, before that every single drug, bar none, has side effects. And that the side effects are the effects of the drug. And it's just lucky, it's just luck if you do take a drug and you do happen to get better, you're doing it really in spite of the drug.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Pretty much. And again, antibiotic means anti-life. And you got to ask yourself, why, if you want to live, why are you taking an anti-life pill?
Right. And people always hark back to the thing, well, penicillin came along and it helped, it saved people from, pneumonia or something like that.
And the answer is false. Absolutely not. It could not possibly have. How do I know this? Because in my practice, I had so many penicillin failures. And you know what beat out penicillin every time? Garlic. Oh. Garlic. I put my penicillin failures on garlic and had not a single a garlic failure. So with that information then, it tells me that if there was garlic back when penicillin came along, that penicillin was not an improvement.
Right.
Had nothing to offer. Now, penicillin was in a needle. You could inject it. That's true. It was a pill form. That's true. It didn't stink like garlic did. But that's about the size of it. So you can't argue that penicillin was more effective than other available treatments at the time.
Right.
Because, again, in my practice of 10 years practicing medicine, I just can't tell you the penicillin failures. Finally, one day I woke up and said, you know what? Let me try garlic. And I started giving garlic capsules, or recommending garlic capsules to people, and boom, they got better, quicker, with fewer side effects than had I prescribed penicillin. And I just deleted penicillin from my formulary. I just stopped using it. What for?
Sure. Well, tell the people, tell the listeners about the booklet that you have. That is, well, everyone should have this booklet, and it is. You talk about. Let's see. What do you talk? It is. First of all, you have your vitality capsules, which are very, very good. But you have a booklet that tells people what to take for any kind of infection, and it covers.
Oh yeah,
every
10 remedies so powerful they could make antibiotics obsolete. This is really, really super important. And you go to the vitalitycapsules.com site, click About Me, and you'll see a box upper right corner. If you enter your name and email address, you will get a free report talking about how to cure 10 common infections without antibiotics. And these were exactly what I used in my medical practice. It allowed me to just stop using antibiotics. I just didn't have to write the prescription. I still use a prescription pad, but instead I wrote the directions on a prescription pad about how to use the garlic or the clove or the Vicks or the whatever I was using.
Sure. And that is what I have in my medicine cabinet, my apothecary. I have a lot of powders and things, and I make my own capsules. I have two sizes of a capsule maker so that I can do my own stuff, my own cinnamon or whatever. And I just feel so much better. And I think that people, if they take responsibility for their own health, that they're going to feel so much better, that they don't need to depend on somebody else.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, it's just...
It's just a psychological warfare thing where people have been demoralized and robbed of their confidence. And this is something that used to start in kindergarten. Now it starts in preschool. But really, if people would see this as simply a lack of confidence on their part, it would be easier. Now, a good start is this report, 10 Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. So check it out. Take a look at the remedies. And try some of the remedies out. I mean, I think collectively they might run you $15 if you bought every last one of them from your local grocery store, you know, or some, you know, you might want to buy something for your health food store. But most everything there you can get from the grocery store.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, yeah, I mean, I think that's just a wonderful thing that you offer. And, well, tell us about the Vitality Capsules.
Oh, the Vitality Capsules. Vitality Capsules are awesome.
They are.
I started out back in the 90s doing things naturally, and what I was doing was helping people with things like diet and cleansing and just, you know, getting them healthy and really just having phenomenal results. But there are these people that I just couldn't help. It was just awful because I could not get them to poop, and I realized that the stool, this waste, had to leave the body in order for people to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that was a huge, huge breakthrough in my understanding. And so I had people who pooped once a day, once a week, and I realized that I could not heal those people with dietary changes. And so I would tell them, well, you know, you could take some castor oil and just drink it down. Well, you could do this. Well, you could do that. Like, no, 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 no. I'm not going to poop more. Tell me something else that will get me better. And I was just so done out. And so then I found this recipe in a newsletter for these various ingredients. And so I mixed them together and tried them out myself outside of a capsule, not in a capsule form. And it made me go. But I found that the cayenne was too harsh. So I lowered the cayenne strength from 130 heat units down to 60 heat units. And then over the years, I found that the cayenne was too harsh. People, I've been doing the vitality capsules for 20 years now, that people's systems just really couldn't tolerate the cayenne very well, and it was too harsh, People had incredible knots tying up their stomach and really bad shooting pain, but they had bowel movements. And so then I said, well, we got to soften it up. So now the Vitality Capsules have no cayenne in them, but they do have garlic, and that enhances the circulation. It's a powerful deterrent and suppressor of organisms, whether it's viruses, bacteria, worms, you name it. And it gets the parasites to want to leave, and it helps them leave as well. So it's a stimulant. It also gets rid of tiredness. Then there's ginger. It reduces inflammation, prevents blood clots, helps the circulation. It relieves nausea, but also helps the digestion and helps the intestines function in a coordinated way. So it helps with like colitis, colic, and dyspepsia. And then there's LO in there, which is a powerful anti-inflammatory, antiviral. And I use CAPE LO, which makes it a very powerful laxative. So it strengthens the intestines and gets them to contract and helps with gastritis and ulcers. And then there's Senna. Senna is a laxative, but Senna is a really powerful stimulant. And it can cause discomfort, but the discomfort is balanced by the ginger and the cloves. And so the Senna gives it a little more effectiveness, but we have other ingredients that offset the Senna, so it's more gentle. And then there's Cascara Sagrada. This is awesome, because Cascara Sagrada not only empties the bowels, but it enhances bile flow. And most people who are sick because there's stagnant bile and the liver can't dump any more trash because the bile isn't swelling. And so the Cascara Sagrada gets the bile flowing and decongests those bile ducts. And it's also been believed to be a help in chronic indigestion and chronic liver disease. And so, again, ginger also makes the Cascara Sagrada a little more gentle but still very effective. Barberry, again, also strengthens the bile ducts, increases bile flow, and reduces inflammation in the gallbladder, and it cleans and strengthens the whole liver and gallbladder system, at the same time helping the intestines to clear. And these work upstream, which means now we're helping the small intestine as well as the large intestine.
Wow.
Yeah, and then I added cloves to it because it has a mild antiseptic property and it's a strong antioxidant. So it steps in there with the repair function. Because a lot of times when you tear that hard, crusted junk off the intestines, it can cause a little bit of soreness. And so the cloves has been a really great addition because now you get the bowel cleansing, you get the bile cleansing with much, much less discomfort. I would say you have 1/20th of the discomfort. In fact, you don't even know the capsules are working until you have a bowel movement. It's like, oh, well, I guess they're working. I wouldn't have had that bowel movement if I hadn't taken
them. Sure.
So they're much more mild.
Now, how would you compare turpentine? And when would you use turpentine as opposed to Vitality Capsules? In which case would you use one or the other?
It's a sequence. I would use Vitality Capsules first, and for many people that's sufficient, and then I would stop there. If the Vitality Capsules get you going regularly but you still have some symptoms, then you add turpentine. That's the simple way to look at it.
Okay.
Turpentine, for most people, will not get them going. It will get the parasites to want to leave, and you don't know which way they're going to go. They could go to your, you know, your skin and give you a rash, go to your head, give you a headache, go to, you know, mess around your belly, give you a bellyache, but you can't rely on turpentine to give you a bowel movement. So that's why you can't just take it.
Okay. Okay, that's very good to know. Yeah, the Vitality Capsules, I've taken them, and my husband has taken them, and he's always had chronic issues. And, gosh, he just thinks it's wonderful. I mean, yep. I mean, I don't want to get too personal, but...
But anyway, they help. They address his concern.
Right, he's regular. And I always, when we think of impaction, I always think of the story about John Wayne.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, who had 50 pounds of fecal matter when he passed away. And I'm thinking, oh, my.
He could have lived a lot longer if he'd just let go of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If he'd only known about Vitality Capsules, it would have been terrific.
Yeah.
So if anybody has any questions or comments, feel free to call into the program at 646-787-19. Oh, no, that's not the right number. Wait. Is that the right number? Yeah, that is the right number. I can let me see. Let me check, make sure that is the right number. I'm so used to giving the RBN number that okay, that is the right number. 646-787-1915. We do not want you to call the 800 number because you'll be calling in to whoever's on RBN right now. So the number is 646-787-1915. And of course, you can always email at comment@spingola.com or ask a question in the chat room. And the chat room is spingola.chatango.com. So tell us what you've been working on recently.
Oh, I've been working on so many things.
I know you've been very, very busy.
Yes, I've been busy. Oh, my biggest thing I'm working on, and you can hear it right now, is quiet. I've moved, which is a really overwhelming task. I didn't realize how tough it would be. But I moved to a new area where I now have wider bandwidth, which means you can hear me well.
Mm-hmm.
We have no barking dogs, no screaming children, and no crowing roosters. There is the occasional bird going tweet, tweet.
It probably used to make our listeners wonder where in the world you were broadcasting from, because every once in a while there would be a rooster and there were barking dogs, and people thought, well, I don't know what they thought, but I thought it was just very interesting.
We had complaints in a chat room. Someone said, why don't you throw a blanket over that bird cage? I said, it's not a bird cage, it's the jungle. Right outside my window, and it's just the way it is.
Oh, goodness. Now, you've been there for how long?
5 years going on 6.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It'll be 6 years this November.
Mm-hmm. And so you actually left at a very, very, very good time, opportune time, I think. Because now I think there are people who are thinking, gosh, we should leave the country. And a lot of people don't have the courage to do what you did.
It really is just a matter of courage, because I was sitting there. I can tell the listeners a little bit of my story. So I had practiced medicine, and I was doing a lot of natural stuff. But I was very holistic in my attitude towards health. You know, I thought that, well, you know, drug dealing and gunshots being fired, the neighborhood people being murdered, well, that's unhealthy. So I cleaned up the neighborhood, you know, got some drug dens demolished, and pretty much moved off of drug dealing. And then there was a bond issue, $30 million, and I said, well, that doesn't make any sense. It's going to impoverish my poor cash-paying clients who already have to really, some of them had to go to church and pass a collection plate to be able to pay my, you know, office fee. So raising their taxes to pay a $30 million bond issue made no sense. So long story short, I contacted the bank. I told them, you know what a bad deal you're making? You know you'll never see your $30 million again. And the bank said, oh, my God. And they backed out of the bond issue, but the governor had already been bribed. So the governor called the licensing board, and they went to work. And at the end of the day, I had no license. I was on the terrorist watch list and two do not employ lists. And so here I was sitting in the United States with absolutely no income and no hope of any income. And I was, and my finances were dwindling quickly. And I was really just selling, I had to just sell everything. I decided at that point to sell everything and leave. I said, well, where am I going to go? And how am I going to leave? I got these kids. How am I going to leave?
Sure.
Finally, I woke up one day and said, I know, I'm going to buy a ticket. I'm just going to buy a ticket, get on the plane, and get out of here.
Sure.
So I went to Austria to check that out, and Austria was very cold, but in Austria, they said, well, natural healing is okay here as long as you don't let the government know what you're doing. I said, oh, no, I'm sick and tired. I'm not hiding from any government. I'm not doing that.
Sure. You've been there, done that.
Yeah, if I can't abide by the law, no way. So then I found out about Jamaica, went to Jamaica, but they were kidnapping tourists at the airport, and I said, that's a little rough for me. Then I went to St. Lucia, and beautiful, beautiful places. Oh, so expensive, and money was one thing I just didn't have. Not only that, but the people were so unhappy, and I couldn't figure out why, but I didn't need to know why. It's all I need to know. Expensive to live there, unhappy people, out of here. Then I came to Panama, and Panama has many different climates. And so I went to the north mountains in Volcan first. That means the size of the volcano, so it gets its name from the Volcan.
Mm-hmm.
It was so cold and so damp. I said, oh, my God, I can't live here. And so then I went back to the States trying to figure out where to go. And I met somebody who was living in Panama, and I told them that I was looking for another country. Said, oh, Panama, you got to come to Panama. Here, go to my condo on the beach. You can stay there for a few days. Here's the code to the internet, and I'll leave the keys for you at the desk. Would you just, are you going to come that week? You think, oh, no problem. Just go on down there, try it out, whatever, and don't worry about anything. My housekeeper will clean up after you.
Wow.
Yeah. I saw there's a piece of friendliness.
Yes.
So I took her up on her offer, and I went down to the beach where it was nice and hot. And I'm from Syracuse, New York, so I was ready for a little bit of hot. And I said, oh, okay, this is it. And it has such great hospitality, too. Wonderful. And so I came here thinking that I would set up a retreat kind of situation for people to come and heal. But the investment for that would be like $3 million. And I'm like, well, I just don't have that kind
mm-hmm.
of money.
Sure.
So I started working online and, you know, just growing and growing little bit by little bit by little bit. And now, you know, the online business has grown to the point where I'm really able to do a lot more with Vitality Capsules. I'm able to do the radio show, which, as you know, even though radio shows, the cost of the show might be not very much. In my case, I have to pay an assistant to send out notices about the show. I have to pay for a website and a web person to post the show and put it in a form people can access. And it just really piles up. And now, of course, I've had to move to a different location to get better reception, which is a much higher cost, you know, per month. So there are a lot of costs associated with it. And because of, you know, the growing revenue, I've been able to handle those costs. So now I'm able to also take another step, which is what I want to do, is just to turn these radio shows into different books for people. So they can either have them on Kindle or buy them physically and, you know, really refer back to them and
exactly.
have it in a meaningful way.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I know that you also do personal consultations with people, and you're
yeah.
very, very affordable, and very thorough, very knowledgeable. So, yeah, you can still do what you went through the training, the allopathic training, and then figured out what you could do that could really, really help people. And, well, the name of your program in RBN is Healing with Dr. Jennifer Daniels. And you're not even allowed to use the word cure, or you weren't allowed to use the
oh,
word
no,
cure.
Oh, no, I would never use that word cure. In medical school, we weren't allowed to use the word cure, but it's because we didn't cure anything.
Exactly.
And as a non-doctor, you can't use the word cure because the government doesn't want the present system to have any competition.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not important to use the word cure. It's important to use the word heal, to let people know that they can accept responsibility. And I don't care how inept you think you are, you can do a much better job of healing yourself in the present medical system.
Oh, absolutely. I totally believe that.
Yeah.
And
but I'm saying that for your audience, to let them know
yes.
that they have the power and they have the authority. And it's simply there to exercise. And if they need some help or guidance with that, they can go to my website, vitalitycapsules.com, click on Discovery Session. They used to be free, but now we charge for them.
Uh-huh.
But I will tell people, if you do buy Vitality Capsules about twice a year, I have a freebie where I just say, hey, Dr. Jones wants to talk to you, and everyone gets a free 10-minute whatever.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. But you're so affordable. I mean, it's just...
I'm affordable. It's much cheaper than going to your doctor and getting tests and being tortured.
And being sick and not getting well.
Yeah, that's the real price. That is an incredible price that people are paying unnecessarily.
Exactly. Now, you were talking about garlic just a little bit ago, and mm-hmm. and somebody in the chat room wants to know, okay, how do you administer the garlic? Do you do garlic oil capsules if you're just going to use garlic, or do you chop up garlic and...
You have to get the report because sometimes it's garlic in oil, sometimes it's garlic as a tea, sometimes it's garlic powder from your kitchen put into capsules. It depends on what kind of infection you're handling.
Okay, and that report is free.
It's free.
So yeah. It's not going to cost anybody
not
anything.
Not a penny. VitalityCapsules.com, click About Me, and in the upper right-hand corner, enter your contact information. You get the free report. People absolutely love it. It has really changed people's lives, and there's people who absolutely just, they just hold on to that and refer back to it and use it.
Oh, absolutely, I do. I know. I have a file. I have a file on you, and I have all the things, anything that we've ever talked about. I have this report, and when I had a consultation with you, I kept those papers. It's all. I have this file. You are in my computer on your own personal file.
Wow, thank you.
That's so I know where to find the things that I need to, and so that I can always access them. And I thank you for helping me. And it's wonderful that you can feel like you can take responsibility and that you're not dependent on somebody else who sees you for 10 minutes. Not even 10 minutes.
No, not even that.
Because
maybe
now,
3 to 5 minutes, yeah. I mean, you feel like you're being handled for hours. You wait in the waiting room for 1 to 2 hours. Then the nurse brings you in. She chit-chats for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. And you sit in the room for 30 minutes. And you know what I mean? But the actual FaceTime is very, very minimal. Not only that, at the end of the whole experience, you get a piece of paper where you go someplace else, you pick up a substance that's going to harm
make
you.
Make you really sick.
It's designed to make you sick, and you're still not any better. And you've wasted all of that time, valuable time in your life. You know, you spent literally 5 to 6 hours from door to door, driving to the doctor's office, waiting, doing what you do, driving to the pharmacy, waiting, and ending up back home. It's enough to make a healthy person sick, and if you're already sick, it'll wear you right out.
Sure. And the other thing is, too, that you hate to, well, at least I did, that you feel like you had to get better on whatever medication that you were on and that you really couldn't complain because obviously the doctor knew best and put you on the very best thing. So if it isn't working, then it must
be your own fault.
It's my fault. It's whatever is wrong with me that is being stubborn, or maybe it's something else. And so you hate to go back and say, you're really inept. You didn't help me at all, and I want my money back. Now, if you took your car in to be fixed, and then they give you the parts and whatever, and if there was the same cure rate or success rate with your car, you'd be screaming your head off.
Yeah, you would demand a refund. But what they do now is they have insurance. All refunds go to the insurance company.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Any refund goes to the insurance company. So let's say you go to a doctor. The visit costs $250. You pay, say, $50 or $25, right, 10% copay. You pay $25. The insurance company pays $225, and there's a refund. If there's a refund, you only get $25 back.
Wow.
And that's wrong because you paid the full amount of the premium. The refund should go to you.
Exactly.
But people have allowed this sleight of hand to take place. You know, you're the one who paid the insurance premiums. If there's a refund, you should be the one to get it.
Indeed.
But because of that, it makes sure the patient is always harmed, and that's the name of the game. It's designed to harm you financially, to keep you on a treadmill, so you're constantly working overtime. You know, I was talking to one of my customers in California, and they tell me they're paying $4,000 a month for health insurance to adults. And that's a lot of money. I mean, that's not preventing financial calamity. It's causing it.
Exactly. And what are they getting for $4,000 a month?
Very sick. Lots of tests, lots of surgeries, and not much improvement.
There's been cases where there have been strikes, doctor strikes in various countries.
Yep.
And people are healthier when
without
there's...
Without exception.
Yes.
People are healthier. And I think in California, some doctors went on strike, and the death rate went down.
Right.
The death rate went down.
Now, you've talked about the death rate in numerous programs.
Right.
And the death rate, and you, I mean, it's what, 900,000 people a year die?
Too high, yep. From the medical care they receive, as a result of the medical care they receive, not even their illness. So the number that die in a year, this is 2012, from their just total in all of the United States is 2.4 million. And of that 2.4 million, easily 900,000 died as a result of receiving health care.
Of the medication or something that they did at the hospital.
Right.
Or the infection they picked up at the hospital.
Correct. And the thing to understand is these people are dying because the doctor did it right. They're dying because the doctor followed the standard of care.
Right.
Not due to any negligence. So if you took all 900,000 of these murders and you attempted to get retribution in terms of malpractice, you would not, because the doctor in most cases followed the standard of care.
Right. And in your book, The Lethal Dose, I mean, it's The Lethal Dose, Murder by Medicine is No Accident. And you talk about this. It's one of the first things that you discuss about the how many deaths there are.
Yeah.
And you've covered nursing home and malnutrition. And the nursing homes, the people in the nursing homes, they're such a target for the pharmaceutical industry.
Well, they're a target, period. They're a target for everybody. I did another show where I covered the fact that pensions in the United States, even though they may appear private, many of them are being paid by the government. So you have a government who has a financial interest in your death, and the government is presiding over the Medicare system.
Right.
That doesn't make sense. It does not make sense to have the same person paying your monthly Medicare check, the same person paying your private retirement check, and that person is paying for your health care to help you live longer? I don't think so.
Right.
Yeah.
And the other thing about the Medicare system is that typically the, let's see if I get this right, Medicare should actually be talking with the pharmaceutical industry and actually negotiating for lower prices with the pharmaceutical industry. But it often happens that Medicare system pays full price to the pharmaceutical industry for their drugs. And they always seem to choose the most expensive drugs, particularly when you're talking about nursing home facilities and the psych drugs that they take.
Right. There's a reason for that. It is actually written into the legislation that the Medicare program is prohibited from negotiating with
right.
the drug companies to lower prices.
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? And yet, if it were any other organization, they would be negotiating. But it's because the government and the pharmaceutical industry are, well, they're incestuous. They're in bed together.
It's not so much, you could say it's incestuous, but the government has an overriding interest in the death of these older people because it can stop paying these pensions. Many people don't understand is there is legislation passed in the 80s called ERISA, the Retirement Security Act. And what that act meant was that private companies could loot their pension funds and the government would sell them insurance and the government would take over those pension funds. The government is now paying close to $1 trillion a year in retirements for looted pension funds where the worker actually paid into the pension fund throughout his life. And so this worker is now retired. He's collecting a check from, he thinks, his private company, but really from the government because the private company fund was looted. And second, he's collecting a Medicare check, both of which are being paid by the government, unbeknownst to him. So now the government stands to save a pretty penny if he's murdered. And what better way than Medicare to do it?
Holy cow. Now, what was that law again, ERISA?
ERISA. Go ahead and read it. It's shocking. It will shock you. It's called the Employment Retirement Security Act, ERISA. And what it does is it allows the companies to, instead of putting aside money for the retirement, they can put aside money that they think will, when the market explodes like we all know it's going to. So you put in a dollar today to get out $100 in 30 years. We know how that math works with all the market ups and downs and things. And so what happens then, if the government, if the company puts in less money into retirement, obviously has more money for bonuses, but the government collects more money in taxes on the profits and this and that and whatever. And so the government's in it with them. The government says, okay, if you stiff your workers today, then we will pay the retirement benefits in the future, tomorrow.
Sure.
And every year, hundreds of, actually many billions of dollars of those funds are declared insolvent, and the government has to pay those funds. But the government allowed the theft to happen, so the government would increase its revenue in the short term in terms of increased taxes and those kinds of things, rather than having the money actually put aside like it's supposed to. So now the bills come due, and the government has a Medicare program that, by the government's own admission, is murdering 180,000 Medicare recipients a year. That doesn't sound like much, but every bit helps.
Holy cow.
Oh, and you can Google that. That's in the 2010 or 2012 Inspector General's report for Medicare. The Inspector General issued a report about that.
Okay.
And do you know what the government's solution is to these murders?
Cover-up, obviously.
No. They're going to form a committee.
Oh.
Yeah, form a committee. And that was 2012, and the committee has not spoken or done any. It's 2012 or 2020, but we've heard no more information from the committee at all.
Okay, so they form a committee. Congress is going to investigate it, and nobody's ever going to hear about it again.
Correct.
Because the public has a very short memory.
Well, no, it was not publicized. The report was just simply published, and it's just placed online as a document. It was never an issue on a 6 o'clock news.
Yes.
I mean, it was never publicized. I mean, the Wall Street Journal didn't cover it.
Amazing.
You know, it wasn't widely disseminated information. There was no press release. It was just, you know, boop, it happened.
Right.
And then, you know, if you want to make it even more interesting, so the same group of people, we'll call it the government, we don't really know who that is, but we'll just say the government, that has a compelling economic interest in murdering its citizens after a certain age, is now murdering 180,000 a year that it admits to. This is only what it admits to. I have to stress that. I mean, no one twisted their arm and investigated. They investigated themselves and said, oh, we think this is happening. This is their self-confession.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're going to allow them to administer something called the Affordable Health Care Act and set standards for health care for the whole population?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound prudent.
No. And it's been incremental. I mean, from after World War II, and then in 1965, Johnson created Medicare, or at least the government, his administration created Medicare. And at that time, everybody thought, wow, this is good, because then the older people will have help with medication.
They don't have to worry about it. But how about just not showing up? Then you don't have to worry about it.
Right. Exactly. Holy cow. What a system. No wonder you went to Panama.
Yeah, and we don't have any health insurance. We don't ever go through the doctor no matter what happens, and we're just really happy. We got all this spare time, you know, because we're not going to the doctor or the pharmacy or anything.
Wonderful.
So I see we've only got a few seconds left, so.
Okay. Well, your website is
VitalityCapsules.com.
Exactly. And get that free report, Natural Remedies That Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete.
That's right.
And thank you so very, very much for being on the program today. And I hope that the listeners will tune into your program tomorrow to learn about Ebola. And that program is on the Blake Radio Network, and they can access that through your website.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
All righty. Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye, listeners.
Start with you and me.